Hey, hey, hey.
Hello.
Insert buzzwords 15. It's ongoing.
15,
oh. Last time we said we will record it until Sunday, but actually it's Monday today. Yeah, anyway, we will just glance over it. We'll not say a word.
I was really busy because I was traveling a little bit, and you were really busy because you were locked in.
Yeah, true. We had a storm, and yeah, I couldn't make it to Berlin, and I was stuck in the countryside.
My dad was actually saying that this is the storm that went to the US but made it through the globe and is now back to Germany.
Oh, really? Okay.
And he is like a fan of weather forecasts.
Okay. I won't comment on this now.
Yeah. No, it's about my father, basically. You shouldn't.
No. So, yeah. So, he's a serious...
Slack off. Okay. So, Slack just died. Anyhow. So
what is the recap of the week? Like, the internal, introductionary recap. I was busy getting onboarded.
Oh. Yeah, we were stuck. So, you were onboarded. You were stuck. I was not stuck and I was not being onboarded. I just had, I was looking basically a little bit into spring lately because a colleague of mine from Kazakhstan was showing me that. But I was, it's spring boot together with Angular and everything seems to be totally awesome, but then I think it's still too complicated. I just don't like complex stuff.
Spring Boot was this Java thingy? Java web server internally, or?
It's a web app, web framework, I would say, and it's comparable with DropWizard, just that from the history, I think it was always a little bit too complicated. And now it's supposed to be less complicated, but I think it's still complicated. And they throw TypeScript now within the same repository. So basically you would write TypeScript for the front end, Spring for the back end, and then everything is on one big mono repository. And I see that it's nice to have the front end code with the back end code and being able to have all in one and launch it and everything. I think that's a cute idea, but it has always been the case for Clojure and Clojure Script already, so it's just nothing new.
But speaking about monorepos, I don't know if I like this monorepo idea at all.
I think it's really tough. I think if everything is from one glue and you have this, I think it's again Conway's law, if you have this organizational structure where you can have that and it's not overly complicated because everybody is anyways in the company, or I don't know how you make it work with distribute. I like this so much that you have a GitHub or a what was the other one, the
GitLab,
and then everybody has his own space and then you PR across the organizations, and I like that. And but I can see that if you have like the real big code base and you know everything and you have your internal proprietary libraries anyways, it's a little bit tedious that managing of dependencies. I just went into this dependency hell again last week. And if you have everything in one repository, then it might be actually less painful to see, there is my model for my whatever type I have, and then you will bump that version and immediately it goes and updates and the repository makes it for you, because Facebook and Google, I believe, have such a system, but they also have built their own build system, so there's nothing that works with any known open source Grunt or Gradle or Maven or
Arco
doesn't have anything in that regard, but
Yeah, I mean, I agree that, I mean, first, I think before you start a monorepo, you have to have your processes, like, they have to be, like, perfect, or not, or close to perfect.
Everybody needs to know what's going on, I guess. That's really important.
And the scope of the monorepo should be to some purpose, maybe some business business value or some business API or whatever. I think having a monorepo for like the whole company not going to work out, right? Because you have like managers for this and managers for that, and if some the structures are not monolithic as well, if you have like not a tree but a graph with cycles, or so if you have
I mean, ideally you should not have that, right? So if you have a clean design, then maybe you have actually a tree.
True. And But let's say the front end of the store and the front end of the whatever else, like let's say content management system, and then someone says, yeah, let's put everything in one repository, that sounds unnatural to me. Like normalization in databases, like you should cut it down.
In theory, but if
there is a NoSQL database type for business purposes or not, I don't know. The analogy that like lost me, escapes
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I don't know so much. I think there is some value in it for certain. So there's also some company that. Basically, it did something on top of Maven, where you can. Maven already gives you repository or projects within a parent project, and then you can add those together. And I guess it depends if you like it. But if you have tens of microservices, I don't know. Yeah, I maybe one has to see a good example, and then
yeah,
we
maybe.
Get hyped up.
Maybe.
Maybe it's not, we are too old.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, and I think my why I don't like it is that with my all my Docker images, I have a tree and multiple repositories for each leaf of the tree and each node, so to speak. And that's for a CI/CD pipeline, it's much easier to have a dedicated repo for each given step than having one repository to feed like 15 different steps and then decide with a whitelist and a blacklist which path you want to look into when you have this certain step, right? So
yeah, it will get ugly, I guess.
And it's not, and then you have to have this notion that everyone knows, okay, if you commit something to this monorepo, then you have to prefix your commit message with whatever you have done, because otherwise no one will know what's going on. And I don't have this problem if I have a dedicated repository, then it's about this very limited scope thingy, and I don't have to say, yeah, this was the scope XYZ, because the scope is clear if it's not a monorepo. As you said, having a good example and experience my
I just found it, so of course it's in the world's first class community of programming language. There is something called lining and monolith, and it has some interesting, because it does some process related jobs for you. So you would say you are updating an upstream library, or you would say I skip a version, or you would say this is upstream of something else.
But then you release something in one, like in one shot, right?
Yes. So I will bump this now, and then it goes through all of the other sub repositories and or subfolders and projects, and will bump the versions accordingly and does the Git history for you, for instance.
Yeah. Okay. So then maybe I can see if it's a release of a certain thing that has to be released in lockstep. Then maybe there's value.
This is also the simple case that this company knows exactly what's going to build and knows its business problems, and all that's coming on microservices just divide and conquer based stuff that is still value streaming for their simple business case. And they have one, and they do one, and all they're doing around it is basically get everything engineered in a almost perfect way. So it's just splitting out code and make it a library or not, and then do this in a monorepo. I think that's very that's still a scope where everything is tied to one. It's not that we're talking, I don't know, Amazon with a million services or something where you have this business use case and this other business use case. And when you try to unify on top of that, I don't see it really.
Yeah, but we will put anyways. It in the show notes. So I just told you that you have to push me the link. Yeah, cool. So MonoRepo is just a sidetrack. What else do we have? I played around with KSQL last week a little bit, like on as a side project, and I'm pretty beefed. That's pretty cool. So I created a little QFrame agent that pushes every event, or that's the goal actually, pushes every event of the Docker engine into Kafka in different topics. So totally normalized, basically. And then then push everything flat. In a flat repository. Yeah. So if you have like a config that is a container config, then and it refers it with a container ID, then you have a container detailed topic where all the container details are in, hence the name. And then you have a container config which refers to this. So that everything is like normalized as we learned it in school, or I learned it in school back 10 years ago. And I tried to make it so that everything is flat. And then the idea would be that every agent can push it to the top topics, and then having a Kafka or KSQL stream processing step that puts everything together again, so that an endpoint, which you can write in Clojure if you like, presents. That's how nice I am. Presents this stream of information as a JSON REST endpoint again, who should be like, or which should be the same as the normal JSON REST endpoint that the Docker engine has, so that you have a an aggregated endpoint for all engines pushing to the same Kafka. That would be cool. And on top of this, we can then ask our favorite JavaScript guy to put a nice front end.
Here's the thing. So I think that because there's also stateful, so queryable stateful stream processing, which basically is what KSQL is built on top of. So there is a stream processing application running in the back, which is very generic. Basically, it apparently knows about every topic in Kafka. And I don't know if that's the final stage they want to build, but you can now actually don't use the KSQL console. You can just have a stream application that builds up your current state with the same operations. It's just that you don't write SQL. And then this has already a REST API.
Okay, but I like SQL. I mean, it's easy, and maybe it's a step that we can, or that I can skip, but it's a good, nice,
so, simple example. Yeah, but your web service will now basically go down to a console command and issue a process from Golang to call the Java KSQL interpreter.
You can split up KSQL in the engine and the command line interface, right? And
yeah.
And I created a Docker image that only runs the engine. And then once the engine is spun up, then I will start another container that is only a one-shot container that then sources a file where the ASQL statements are in, so that it creates the...
Interesting.
But you are right. I mean, it's not mandatory to do... like this. Maybe it would be easier to have just a Java process. It's a stream processor. But my Java skills, as you know, are non-existent, so I know SQL. So yeah, that's maybe easier for me to do it like that. But can I use Avrov with this, with KSQL yet?
No, not yet. No.
But that's the end goal, right?
Nah, I don't think so, because it kind of goes... Avro allows you to describe really complex data structures makes the encoding and the decoding or unmarshalling and marshalling for you. And it does this very effectively, and it takes care about this forward and backwards compatibility. The problem is that it's a little bit too generic in terms of you can easily create a very nested structure and it's completely valid, but then it doesn't mean anything anymore for SQL. And it would be pretty hard to go, because what is the column? I have this nested data structure, data dot my client ID, my microservice, and the action he did. And action type. Then you have a path that is, you can walk that down in every JSON, that's fine. But what? How do you join this against something else? Because now it's not dense anymore, but sparse. So there might be nils on the other side of a join, or there might... And I think, it has to be sorted out. It's just, for now, it's just plain JSON. And we tried, tried a nested structure, and it didn't work in JSON even. So if you had something that is a little bit nested and not flat in JSON, you cannot do anything.
Yeah, I mean, this makes, I thought that makes sense to me, because because a table in SQL is also flat, so...
Yes.
And this is what we talked about, right? I mean, this is how I understood
it. It's kind of like you have this set of things. It's still rational, relational algebra, not rational, relational algebra. And set theory behind it, it must be very clear what's in a set and what's not in a set. And if you do operations with multiple sets, then they need to be well-defined. Otherwise, SQL cannot handle this.
So one has to, if you iterate on your structures, on your JSON basically, then you have to create new topics, maybe make a V1 topic, make a V2 topic, and then iterate and version your data according to the topic name basically.
Yeah.
Or can I create a topic that only where I limit what can be pushed? I guess that's not possible, right? But that I say, okay, this topic has this schema and this.
Yeah. No, it's still like, so for validating and ensuring they choose already. So this is exactly what I ask myself too, is when they go for everything needs to be schematized, so we can have a writer validation. We're not throwing dirt in our Kafka, but we're validating before we do anything. And then we use Avro for making sure that we can move and still evolve our data, and that's all cool. But KSQL is it's a logical step from queryable stateful stream processing, but it has also its burden. It doesn't really... Yeah, well, how do you do this now? Because if everything needs to be flatted JSON, you are still have a stream application that might read your raw data that is already validated and then transforms it to a JSON. But now what? How do you evolve this now without breaking your queries? It's not solved yet.
I mean, as far as I understood it, I mean, you could create more keys in your JSON and then your KSQL will still work, right? So if you add a new field in your JSON, then it's not a problem. You can't, you are not able just to leave something out. You cannot go back, which is obviously something that we saw a couple of times in the industry. If you're only able to add, then 1 year from now, you will have like crazy...
A big mess.
Yeah, a big mess, basically. That's obviously not something that is desirable to... So one topic, that's the best I came up with so far, but I haven't gave it too much thought yet, but I thought that I will use different topic names for versioning and make sure that my KSQL is expecting the right schema somehow. But
here is the example. So while you're talking, I'm just really getting everything from GitHub that I want to.
Interactive queries.
Yeah. So
what is interactive queries again?
That's what the first container you build for KSQL, that's what it does, only that this example here is in Clojure and the one that you have is in Java. It's basically have a web service that connects to a socket and is able to serve queries. And in the same time, it will also be able to create this use the Kafka Streams API and build a Kafka stream and then run it actually with the defined time windows and everything.
So it's not KSQL, but it's
it's a step before where you go, I have this topic and I have this topic and this is the idea I want to join with, or maybe you just want to listen to one as a table and just emit it over a time window, then you could do this and create your stream processor. And what you also need to implement then is a state. So your stream processing must be happening with a state store, and because it's the VaultDB or RocksDB or something, it's already in the streaming application. So you have locally, you have a database, an in-memory database basically, and all you do against this is issue queries and then serve them via REST, via HTTP.
Okay, and looking at this structure, there's like, you have multiple lines with an ID and then dash dash and then a name. Right, it's maybe the table, I guess. I mean, the use case is a restaurant where you have one topic for customers, I guess. Where is it? Yeah, topic customer, and then you have topic order, and you have one dash dash John, and then one dash dash spaghetti. So if he's
Yeah, but this is how you would serve queries from your that you want to issue over a window against Kafka topics.
Okay.
Then I came across, I guess we're not doing a very long podcast today, dear audience, dear listeners, because as you might have heard already, we are just syncing ourselves with what we read on the internet lately. But there is something else I wanted to share, and it's, I think I repeat myself, but there is what's the school? Coursera deep learning course, which basically costs actually €50 a month, but it's with Andrew Ng, the guy who does the deep learning stuff for, I think, Alibaba. And I had this introduction to machine learning on Coursera, and now he's making have one big course with lots of different blocks in between where you can get up to speed with deep learning. And I'm actually thinking about purchasing it. And then it's supposed to be always 3 to 4 weeks where you have 6 hours per week. So it's okay-ish kind of making it side the job.
Yeah, so 1 hour in the evening.
And it's with TensorFlow, and so no kidding here, it's serious stuff. And because the first thing was kind of in Octave or something, some weird MATLAB similar programming language that was good for what it was, but definitely not something that you would throw into production.
A programming language that is good for what it was.
it's a tiny, it's like students can work with that. So if you know MATLAB,
yeah,
MATLAB costs insanely money for students. They cannot afford it, and this is somewhat binary compatible. So you could, if you have an exercise as a student in MATLAB, you could use this weird language and have mathematics syntax and do your computations and give it the professor, and he can still execute it within MATLAB.
Yeah, okay. So you're going to do this course then.
The other thing is, I saw also a €450 cheap course on Kubernetes, and that's from the Linux Foundation, and Linus Torvald is making a booha there in front of the webpage that this is very awesome to support, I guess, linux.org or something. So yeah, I'm not decided yet what to do, but I definitely in the winter time I will do one course. I hope to get it done. Yeah.
Okay.
And then there is a nice blog post, but maybe everybody who reads Hacker News has the same, I guess. It's why Agile is not working. And this is one of my Lieblings topics.
Favorite topics.
And he taught, it's really interesting, this blog post, because he is basically arguing it is my understanding that if you measure, if you are really good at measuring where you spend time, it's most of this time because of communication issues and you are blocked because somebody else is not talking quickly enough and unblocks a certain thing that the team wants to do. And Scrum is basically not capturing all these, if you will, blocking. If you make a blocking call to your neighbor department and you have to work, wait for a day or two, this has never been measured in a normal Jira Scrum board or something. And it makes it, Scrum itself makes it a little bit invisible that you might have a dysfunctional organizational structure where everybody is blocked on each other, that and nothing is moving really forward. And then everybody on top of that has these sprint meetings and groaming. But in groaming meetings, we all know most of the time you complain about the same stuff, but you're not able to change anything really big because it's not there for you. It's just, no, I'm getting too ranty, but it's difficult to really change stuff and improve your process. Most of the time you do what you do, and this blog post kind of illustrates what you should measure to get a better idea if it's really worth for you that you do Scrum. He doesn't argue that Scrum is or Agile is in all situations not good, but he argues that there are many situations where you could actually not do it and be still as productive as you want to be. Or Agile most of the time has something to do with how good is your code quality in the end, because if your code quality is good, then you can move ideas around, you can implement stuff, you can change code without falling over, and then you are agile. Yeah, it's a nice blog post. We have it in the show notes. And
and to derail this a little bit, I read a blog post from our beloved Brandon Gregg. But it's from May. But it talks also about you have a measure for utilization of the CPU, and this is just plain wrong nowadays. Don't know if you whether you read it
I
or not.
I recall that. No.
It went to my head when you talked about measuring the wrong thing, because in this blog post that I will put a link in the show notes, in CPUs nowadays, if they say the CPU the like top or whatever tells you the CPU is doing stuff, what it's maybe most likely doing is waiting for the I/O from memory coming back, which wasn't a problem like years ago, but now with 36 cores and the memory interface not really keeping up with the core count, then your CPU is 50% of the time is just not doing any instructions. So this is what you want to measure, instructions per second or something like that. And not if the CPU is busy, because you can be stalled and then doing nothing. But that's derailing your post. Okay, cool. That's also nice. Next week, just to give an outlook what's going on next week. Next week, what is next week, Hagen?
And there is a conference in Copenhagen. Ding! Where you will be attending.
Yeah, DockerCon, there it is, exactly. And I think we should have like an evening, like a half an hour or so recap of what was talked, the conference talked about.
Maybe you can use your Twitters or something else where I can follow up already, and maybe have at least a half an hour before to ask you the right questions. Otherwise, it will be just me saying hello and goodbye.
You're right. Maybe I should use my Twitter account more than at the DockerCon. Yeah, that's a good idea. And then I will take my little Zoom and my headset, and then we can do a podcast on Tuesday and on Wednesday. On a Wednesday, I will be back. So I will fly over on Monday and we'll be back on Wednesday evening. So maybe we can even do one Wednesday evening when I'm back in Berlin. But that's to be determined, but that's going to be fun. And for those in Berlin or Potsdam or maybe Leipzig, Schwerin, I will do a little recap at the Docker meetup here in Berlin on Thursday. That's planned.
Thursday already.
Wow. So that we can push out the latest and then have people ask questions directly, that they don't have to wait. That's the goal.
That's perfect. Yeah, I think, with that said, I have nothing else on my list. Maybe we can just wrap up. It's a short, quick, just Christian and me thinking.
Yeah, we should. I don't know if we whether we could put it in this or squeeze it into this week as well. Is Lars back from his holidays?
Yes, but he already flew out today to London for the Jux. And so he will be back on Thursday.
Okay.
And then on the weekend, they are already working on table tennis tournament or volleyball tournament. I have to, I'm like with my podcast entertainment, I'm not in the forefront for the
time. That's a shame.
Yeah, you need to be really spoilty. He spent, that's too private.
but they
are just sport loving people, which is fine for them. But I will ask him. Maybe we get a chance.
And
on
maybe
Sunday
you can also ask the other guy about the Seth podcast. Maybe we can squeeze this in this week.
We have basically now two Seth experts. Some other person also joined.
Bring them in, everyone. And maybe I can make it to like the office and can record it there then.
Yeah, I will ask them tomorrow. I will so write that like down and then
in the morning or maybe around lunch, and then we go to the Spätzle Club.
No, it's closed.
It's closed. Why?
Still, we called even today. Not like nothing new on Facebook, nothing, just nothing.
Yeah, but maybe that's not for our worldwide audience of three. Maybe that's maybe not too interesting. Like, but the Spätzle Club is
closed. It's fine. You can admit that you are Spätzle-süchtig.
Spätzle addicted. Yeah. Okay, cool. Then we will close here. And yeah, we will make another podcast in a short period of time. Bye-bye, okay. Guys.
Bye.